A quick reminder before we get to today's episode, the science Kickstarter is underway. So if you aren't familiar with science, listen to this quick description of the graphic novel from writers Jason Inman and Ashley Victoria Robinson. It's a book I'm really excited about. I can't wait to get my hands on it and share it with my 7-year-old daughter. I think that Ashley and Jason are great writers, and their passion for comics is obvious, and it shows in the quality of their books. So take a quick listen and go pledge and share the Kickstarter with all your friends. Let's talk about your new Kickstarter. What's it all about?
It's called Science with an exclamation point.
So you gotta say it like that.
You gotta say it like Science.
Yeah, there you go. You gotta clip everybody's microphone when you say it.
Take care about that, everybody. Wake up.
Yeah. It stars a 14-year-old girl named Tamsin Trecru. It's more of a middle grade story, whereas Jupiter Jet was more of an all age story. So I guess that means it's a little bit edgier in the type of storytelling. But she is attending the Prometheus Institute. And it's the most amazing kind of school that has cute little robots called stats that fly around. It's got experimental physics. It's got amazing labs. But Tamsin's maybe not as happy to be there as she should be. And that's because her dead father used to be the headmaster there, and working there is what took him from her. So she's determined to, take the school down from the inside, like a normal teenager would want to do.
It's Harry Potter if Harry Potter wanted to destroy Hogwarts. There you go.
Tamsin is driven not only by, the trauma that comes along with losing a parent, but her father was a real smart science guy and downloaded his consciousness into her super cool glasses. So she actually sees a projection of him, and he can see everything that she's doing. And he's leading her on this quest, but he can also see like her interactions with her cute roommate, Garen, which is not what you want your dad to see when you're 14.
And the thing is, too, is that her father actually died when she was 3. So she never knew her father. The only father she has known is this holographic version of her father that has sort of existed around her. Science is a story that we think is pretty unique. I don't think there is a sort of teenager-y Star Trek science fiction-y with real facts out there. And if you like Jupiter Jet and you like our podcast, you like any of our tone, then I guarantee you're going to like this. You're going to like our flavor. And you hear about our passion for comics. Everything we do is how much we love comic books. And we inject that into our comics. Like, I think when you read our comics, especially Jupiter Jet and our stuff in the If anthologies and Love is Love, you can feel that love pouring through. And Science is the exact same thing. So if that doesn't convince you to buy Science or help us pre-order or make this book, then I don't know what will.
All right. If that sounds like something you might be interested in, I highly encourage you to go and check out the Kickstarter for Science. The good news is that in less than 36 hours, the Kickstarter was fully funded. So what that means for you, as someone who goes and does a pledge, you are guaranteed to get the book, right? Like, a lot of times you see something, a Kickstarter, you're excited, you pledge, and it doesn't get fully funded. And you're not out any cash, but you wanted the book. That's why you pledged in the first place. So you don't have to worry about that with Science. It's fully funded, and now we're on to stretch goals, right? And if you listen to our previous Spotlight episode on Science, you'll know that Jason and Ashley, the first thing they're going to do with any stretch goals they meet is add more content, more pages, more story. So again, I think it's completely worthwhile. I've already pledged. Go over there, do yourself a favor, and check it out. Episode 520 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace. This is a Top Cow Thursday episode. It's the Top Cow Chronology Project, and today I'm going to be talking about Chapter 2 of the Devil's Reign crossover. It's Psyblade Ghost Rider from January of 1997, and this book is written by Ivan Velez Jr. Pencils are by Anthony Chun and David Finch. Does a few pages here. Inks are by Aaron Soud and Joe Weems. Colors are by Peter Steigerwald. We also have computer colors by Peter Steigerwald, Tyson Wengler, Richard Eisenhoff, and Greg Hammond. Letters are by Dennis Heisler. So a lot of people had a hand in this one. And, you know, this is the early days of, really early days of computer coloring. So you can kind of understand why so many people are involved. So again, this is the crossover between Marvel and Top Cow that happened in the late 90s, the Devil's Reign storyline. If you didn't join us last Thursday for Top Cow Thursday, I covered part one, and we basically saw that Mephisto stole an alien ship that had crash-landed and been buried under a lot of rock and sand and what have you in the California Mojave Desert. That ship was Siri in design, the Siri being a species of aliens in the Top Cow universe. Mephisto was able to trick Silver Surfer into unleashing a lot of his cosmic energy. And Mephisto basically captured that energy, used it to repair the ship, and then used that ship to travel over to the Top Cow universe. Once there, he realized that unlike in the Marvel universe, where he was constantly fighting for the souls of the dead with people like Hell and others, that here there was no dark realm. There was no equivalent. And so he's basically looking to take over the Top Cow universe, establish himself as the ruler, and every soul in the universe will then be his for the taking. So that's kind of the situation when the second part starts. And it starts off with Mephisto, the Demon King, as he's called, as he contemplates a new world and a new hell. And he's created a little helper named Scratch. And Mephisto talks about how happy he is that he's found this whole different universe full of betrayal and lust and violence and all these innocents that he can make suffer billions of new souls to corrupt, and it's all his. He goes on to say that he was weary of his own world and the endless repetitive cycles of crime and just ordinary damnation. Here he has a chance for something extraordinary. And he talks about the fact that he already corrupted the noblest heroes, the hero of this world, apparently Heatwave from Cyberforce. I'm not sure why that happens off panel. Sometimes I wonder if, I've only read the first two issues. I've never read these crossovers before, but if there was some other like actual crossovers planned in the regular titles that just didn't come to fruition. Not sure, because the story does seem a little choppy. So kind of like Secret Wars 2, right? There'd be the main book with these Devil's Reign, part 1, part 2, part 3, and so on and so forth. But then it would cross over into some of the regular Top Cow books and some of the regular Marvel books so that you could draw attention to the series. I don't remember that happening, certainly not for Marvel. And so I think maybe that's where the disconnect was. Not entirely sure. I may have to ask Mark Silvestri or Matt Hawkins next time I see them about that. Because again, like I would think that the corruption of Heatwave would have been interesting and helped flesh it out. It's what's really missing in these two first two issues so far, which I'll talk a little bit more at the end after I finish the recap here. So Mephisto goes on to say that he's enjoying the handiwork and the progress he's had so far. Even the vaunted Cyberforce falls apart without Heatwave to lead them. And he's looking at some kind of a sphere where Cyblade's face is shown. And the scene then shifts there to Cyblade. And she's talking about how she has a feeling something's wrong. And she doesn't know why Heatwave disappeared. She's worried that the team's going to fall apart without him. Because despite what anybody else on the team thinks, nobody can be the leader that that Heatwave is. So, again, she just can't shake the feeling that Heatwave's disappearance is just the beginning. Things are going to get much worse than any of them can imagine. Meanwhile, across dimensions, a very similar Earth, the Earth that we know, the Marvel Universe, and Danny Ketch, who's currently the Ghost Rider, is getting a talking to from his counselor, I guess, at his city college, being threatened with losing his scholarship because he's been missing class and his attendance is horrible. Now, we know it's because of Ghost Rider. Obviously, he can't tell that to his guidance counselor here, but as he leaves, he's thinking about how she's right, and he just can't seem to get a grip on things. Every time something important in his life shows up or is about to happen, the Ghost Rider takes over his body and makes him fight some demon or monster, or they've wrecked his apartment, or his family's been threatened. You know, he can't even have any kind of personal relationships because the Ghost Rider's always there, distracting him and interrupting his life. So he thinks, I know the Ghost Rider can't be the only one who's able to fight these threats. Why am I the one that always has to pay the price? Meanwhile, in the East Village, a rundown, patched together apartment, we see Jennifer Hale, who's a Sorcerer Senna scholar, and she's had a rough go of it as well, learning that she's related by blood to Danny Ketch and Johnny Blaze, and she's trying to relax and do some meditation, light a scented candle, and as soon as she lights the candle, we see Eternity show up, and it's a gorgeous page of art, I gotta say. I'm not sure if this may be the Finch page, because he, as I said at the beginning, he did a few pages here. But anyway, Eternity shows up, and he's basically saying, I need your help to restore some balance. He's worried about Mephisto being in another world. And Jennifer's like, man, I'm sorry, but I need a break. You know, I'm not just a pawn to be used by some cosmic entity, no matter how powerful they are. And Eternity doesn't want to hear it. He's like, silence. Your consent is not necessary. The Ghost Rider's abilities are what I need, and you're basically the medium through which I'm going to find the Ghost Rider. So meanwhile, Danny's on a train in the Bronx, and Jennifer appears in her, I guess, astral form in front of him, and he's like, man, really? Here we go again. And Jennifer apologizes, but says, yeah, you know, I'm sorry for dragging you into this, but I'm afraid I didn't have much choice. Mephisto isn't dead. He's in another universe, and you're going to have to go and defeat him to restore the natural equilibrium. And Danny's like, why does it have to be me? I've got my own problems. And Jennifer's like, yeah, you know, I know, but it's not like I have any say in this. It's Ghost Rider they want. And if you're not willing, then I'm supposed to trigger your transformation. And she does exactly that, asking for his forgiveness as she does. So once Daniel Ketch has turned into Ghost Rider, he's wondering who triggered his transformation, and he sees that it's Jennifer Kale. And she seems kind of surprised that Ghost Rider recognizes her. But then she explains that he's desperately needed, Mephisto's alive and wreaking havoc in another dimension, and that's all Ghost Rider needs to hear. He's like, Mephisto? Yeah, if there's any chance of stopping his evil once and for all, count me in. So he forms his bike of hellfire as Jennifer Kale opens a doorway to another dimension, and he drives right through as Jennifer tells him that his job is to go to this world, find the Dark Soul Mephisto, and stop him from turning that world into his very own hell. So Jennifer then goes back to her apartment, and she's thinking that she really hopes that Daniel's able to succeed, because if the Ghost Rider were to be killed, then Danny would be trapped in the emptiness of the void forever, and that's not really a place that you want to be. So meanwhile, in the Top Cow universe, Cyblade is standing out on her balcony, still thinking about the fact that the only family she could ever trust was Cyberforce, and she needs to figure out a way to make sure that they stay together, and she finds their emotional center and brings it back together. That obviously referring to Heatwave. And as she's standing there, she sees a bolt of energy come down from the sky and land in the middle of Times Square. So she goes to check it out. And it's actually the beam of energy which transported Ghost Rider to this world. And she's not the only one who's noticed. Mephisto has noticed as well. And another great double page spread here with Mephisto superimposed over the background saying, not the accursed Ghost Rider. And so the Ghost Rider shows up, starts thinking, how can I start looking for Mephisto? And before he can, a couple of cops see him and pull their guns. And Ghost Rider's thinking, man, my appearance always scares people. I have no choice about that. It seems this universe is no different in its response to what I look like, fear and mistrust. And so he disables the police officers, all three of them, without really hurting them. And a voice from behind calls for his attention and attacks, and it's Psyblade. Obviously, she got there just in time to see him knock the police out, so she's assuming he's a villain. And Ghost Rider's trying to talk, saying, stop this, you don't understand, I'm here to save. And Psyblade doesn't want to hear it. And she says, actually, I'm glad you showed up. You know, punishing some fool super criminal is exactly what I need to relieve some stress. And then she says, what's your name anyway? Firehead? Boneface? And Ghost Rider says, my name's Ghost Rider, and you're beginning to annoy me. And so Mephisto's like, ha, I've seen this before. Miscommunication, pointless battle. Eventually they end up cooperating and have mutual respect for each other. It happens every time two new heroes meet in the Marvel Universe, so why should it be any different here, right? And he's like, not this time. You'll be destroyed. And he basically infects those police officers who were laying on the ground, turns them into demons, and has them start attacking. Psyblade has their back to them, though. And when the Ghost Rider next attacks, she thinks that she's being attacked, but actually he yells for her to duck and takes out one of the soldiers and basically asks her straight out, are you a hero or a villain? And she says, I'm a hero. To which he responds, I am too. Let's join forces and stop this army of darkness. So that's exactly what they do. And as they beat down most of the demons, we see a more powerful figure show up. As Psyblade's wondering if all this mess can be linked to the disappearance of Heatwave, and she doesn't know just how right she is. But as I mentioned, another person shows up, another villain here, and it's Killrazor. And he's able to speak, which he's never done before, which very much surprises her. And he says, yes, it's thanks to the Master. I'm so much more. I'm transcended into the Dark God I was always meant to be. And if you bow down before the Lord Mephisto, you'll be spared a painful death. Psyblade doesn't want to hear it. She's like, I don't know what happened, who you are, or why you're possessing this hero. As for your pathetic offer, here's the only answer you deserve. And she stabs him. So there's a pitched battle that goes back and forth. But eventually she basically beats his head off. And Ghost Rider puts his hand on her shoulder and says, that's enough. Now it's my turn. And he fixes Killrazor with the penance stare, which basically drives Mephisto out of Killrazor into a fiery form. And Ghost Rider is now fully aware that Mephisto is there and knows that Ghost Rider is there, and vice versa. And Mephisto tells Ghost Rider, you'll do no good here. This will be my world. You never had enough power to defeat me, and what makes you think you can stop me now? And Ghost Rider vows that this is not the case, that Mephisto's mistaken. He came for you, and he will crush Mephisto. And so he turns to Psyblade saying, woman, there's a war coming. You must be prepared, for he will take no, and as he says, prisoners. He realizes that both Killrazor and Psyblade have disappeared in a puff of smoke. And Ghost Rider is left there to wonder what's going to happen next. So that's how the issue ends. So it's a fun story. It's very much of the 90s. This whole crossover is a lot of fun. I love the interactions between the Marvel characters and the Top Cow characters. It's really helping to introduce both directions, right? Obviously, there's fans of the Top Cow universe that maybe are getting to read and experience Marvel characters for the first time. And also, longtime Marvel fans, Marvel Zombies, are getting a chance to see these Top Cow characters for the first time. So I love that. Unfortunately, it is of its time in as much as it's art-focused. which isn't necessarily a bad thing. I would say that a lot of books nowadays tend to be art focused, but what they do is they're not trying to tell as large of a story as it seems like they're trying to tell in the Devil's Reign crossover. Or if they are trying to tell that large of a story, they're crossing it over into a lot of other books. I mentioned maybe that was the plan, but I don't think that it happened. I think we just have the 8 issues of the Devil's Reign story and then like a half issue, which was like, I think 18 pages that came with Wizard, or you could order it through Wizard or something like that. So there's a lot of really cool ideas here, but so much is happening or seems to be happening kind of behind the scenes. And, you know, as much as I don't like writing for the trade or decompressed storylines, this is compressed to the point where it feels a little choppy. This issue, not particularly as much as the first issue seemed, except right at the beginning here where we just see one panel of Heat Wave and it's like, okay, Mephisto took him over. Okay, where's that story? I would like that story. This issue is a lot of action with Ghost Rider and Psyblade fighting against each other and then fighting with each other and then fighting against, was it Razor Claw? I think said his name was, or Killrazor rather. So there's a lot of fun here. There's a lot of really great ideas, but unfortunately there's not quite the real estate that it needs. And I think if you took away the three, I think there's at least one double page spread that's just one image. Two double page spreads. The one where Killrazor shows up, and then the one where Ghost Rider shows up in New York, and then we've got the full page spread of the appearance of Eternity. So they're all great images. It's gorgeous art. It's beautiful art. I would not want to take those out of the story, but if you did, you'd have just given yourself 5 more pages. 5 more pages maybe could have shown a little bit of the Heat Wave something. You could have done more. So again, I think it's a product of its time. And this is the way comics were made back then, a lot of splash pages, which is fine. This is, almost think of it as transitional period, right? Like there's comics today tend to have fewer pages and less words and less quote unquote story for the sake of having more art and more detailed art and letting the art tell the story, which I'm totally fine with. But when it's a big event like this and a big crossover, especially when you're crossing over two different publishers where you may need to spend a little more time on just giving us a hint of who these characters are, because I haven't read Cyberforce and I don't know who Psyblade is other than she has like these psychic knives, kind of like Psylocke does. So I know she's a member of Cyberforce. I know that her costume consists of like a bikini top, a bikini bottom, and like thigh-high boots and gloves that are fingerless and go up to almost to her armpits. It's not the most practical costume in the world, but again, it's the 90s, so you've got to take it all with a grain of salt. So again, I'm happy I read it. I'm glad to be, you know, continuing with the chronology. This is very much a part of history, and I really would love to see this redone with modern writers, modern artists. I mean, not that the art is bad in any way, shape, or form, but I would love to see this done again with today's sensibilities and give it the real estate that it needs, whether that's an 8-page main or an 8-issue main series like they did here with crossovers into the other books, or you could even take this exact work, this exact material, and put it in a hardcover, but then have somebody else come in along and fill in the holes in the story and the plot where needed. Kind of like classic X-Men did in the late 80s and early 90s, where they would add a few pages here or there to kind of flesh out the stories. I think that would be awesome. Granted, I'm only 2 issues in, so maybe the pacing slows down a little bit. I'm not really sure. I mean, this is written by somebody, a writer I've never even heard of before, so don't know, you know, what the structure was, if they had a quote-unquote showrunner running this event, or what exactly it is. I will say that this writer, was his name again? Ivan something, right? Ivan Velez Jr. He does seem to have both Mephisto and Ghost Rider's voices down very well. They seem very authentic to me. They seem in character. I don't know Cyblade well enough to say whether she's in character. I would assume that she is, that this guy did his homework. But too often, especially when you have crossovers that are between publishers, one character or the other won't come across as authentic. They'll act totally different than they do in their own publisher's titles. That's certainly not the case here. Ghost Rider's always been one of my favorite. And again, the art is stunningly good. The Eternity page is a favorite. I mean, it is amazing from the rendering to the panel layouts to the backgrounds, the colors. It's done really, really well. I love the way they make Jennifer Kale look when she's in her astral form. It's almost got a little Fathom vibe to it. And then the work on Ghost Rider is done extremely, extremely well. So Anthony Chun, as I mentioned, I don't know where the guy went. I guess he decided he wanted to be a comic artist, because based on the strength of this, I would think he could have had a pretty long and successful career. Obviously, he had some help on a few pages from David Finch, and he did continue to draw comics and has had a great career. So, interesting story. Next Thursday, I'll be covering part 3, and then we'll get back to some modern books for a little while. So, just to let you know where we're going with the Top Cow Chronology. And for those that don't know the Top Cow Chronology, I'll give a quick rundown on what it is. Always wanted to read the Top Cow Artifact universe because I'm a big fan of Matt Hawkins and Mark Silvestri, but I never had, even though Michael Turner is my favorite artist. And I had a giant omnibus of Witchblade, which is kind of the book that kicked off the Artifact universe. And then Cyberforce got folded in later. And so I came across this chronology on Comic Vine. There'll be a link in the show notes from a user named Condor. And he basically created a chronological reading order of the Top Cow universe. And when I say chronological, I mean it didn't start with the first book. It didn't start with either Witchblade number one or Cyberforce number one. It started with books that were in ancient times, like ancient Egypt. And he put them in not an order of publication, but in a reading order. So you would go from the books that happened the furthest in the past up to present day. And it's huge in length. It'll take years and years for us to get through it. But none of the books are particularly, well, for the most part, I'd say 97% of the books are really inexpensive. Like a lot of the times if you go through dollar bins, you can find these Devil's Reign issues. So there's a lot of stuff on eBay. Top Cow still has a lot of stuff in print. You can find trades on eBay or instocktrades.com. So there's a lot of places to get this stuff on the cheap if you're so inclined. There's also a lot of it available digitally. And Top Cow in the past has done Humble Bundles. That's always a great way to pick up a ton of Top Cow material super cheap. You basically pay what you want and get hundreds and hundreds of comics. But keep in mind that they are digital. So I don't know if we'll ever get through the entire chronology, but as I said, there is a link in the show notes where you can go and see what we've covered so far and where we're going next. Obviously, for the next 6 or 7 chronologies that we do, we'll be covering Devil's Reign, and then we'll move on to what's next on the list on the chronology. Do keep in mind, we don't do the chronology every Top Cow Thursday because I do like to cover modern books as well, but we're trying to get back to the chronology a little more often just so we do, you know, finish it in my lifetime, so to speak. So that's a quick rundown of what the chronology is. Hope you guys all enjoy it. So thanks for joining, everybody. Please tell your friends about us, subscribe, and rate us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on iTunes. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource, Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. Don't forget, I'll be at New York Comic Con the first week of October. So if you're going to be there, let me know. Love to meet up with listeners, grab a quick selfie, talk some comics, and hook you up with a free Comic Source lanyard. So once again, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll talk to you next time.